There we go. So, thank you very much. Je suis heureux de pouvoir parler avec vous aujourd'hui. Je vais parler en anglais parce que je suis anglais. Je suis vraiment plus confortable en anglais. I'd also, at the start, like to compliment the person who picked this lamp. Not only because it brings us light, but it brings us beauty and maybe a little truth. So whoever thought of that should be complimented. This is one of the nicest podiums I've been at. I want to talk about imagining the future today. And in the introduction, it said that my background is in philosophy partially. And I have a background in media. I have a background in computer science. I have a background in education, but my first love is philosophy. My formal training's in philosophy. And some of the core questions in philosophy have revolved around the question of predicting the future. How do you predict the future? And one of the major lines of argument that you hear in philosophy is, well, we just have to accept that we can predict the future, that the future will be the same as the past. What are the alternatives? Imagine, if you will, walking down the street and you could never know whether the road or the sidewalk would be there. And of course, nobody can live like that. So when I thought I had an hour to do this talk and not 20 minutes, I was preparing a set of videos of people walking down sidewalks and falling into holes. Because it's a surprisingly common occurrence, much more common than you might suspect. And I think that this is the lesson that we can draw about predicting the future. First of all, it's really hard. Secondly, it's full of holes. But third, we still kind of have to do it. Otherwise, we really couldn't walk. It's just sometimes we have to understand we're going to fall through a hole in the sidewalk. So, thinking about that, and there's been a lot of discussion today, very interesting discussion, worthwhile discussion, about where the future will go, especially in the area of learning. And we've looked at online learning and 21st century learning. And it's almost like the presentations fall into two camps. The first camp really is, if you will, a traditionalist camp. I have in my notes here, we fall back into old ways. And it's almost like in preparing for the future, we really, 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 really want it to be like the past. And that's how we're going to approach it. And what do I mean by that? Well, there's a lot of discussion, for example, in preparing people for 21st century skills that revolve around the idea of training. We need to train them to do this. We need to train them to do that. A lot of discussion about the idea of content transfer. I heard the phrase knowledge mobilization a couple of times. I didn't hear knowledge translation, but I may as well have. Knowledge management, and even management of contracts, which kind of surprised me, coming up in an educational sort of forum, but it was there. Which are very old, indeed, I would even say, old positivist models of education and science and research. And I heard about the old ways of doing the new things. The old ways, what do I mean by that? Well, collaboration is always a big one. Teamwork, right? We need the soft skills. We need collaboration. We need communication. We need teamwork. We need accountability and outcomes. And most of all, we must give our students the competencies to prepare for tomorrow's job environment, whatever that is. And again, it's this idea that the future is going to be like the past. We're going to go on this nice linear path, and we can sit here in the year 2015 and pick out the magical things that we're going to need to teach students now. And I'm here to say that that's probably not going to work out very well. It hasn't worked out well in the past. Think about how we've done at deciding what kind of skills should be taught. When I was going to high school and then university, taking philosophy against the advice of, well, everyone, even the philosophers, they had a little note on the wall, right? You will not get a job studying philosophy, so don't try. I kid you not. It was a little note. It was about this big. It was on the wall in the philosophy department on the fifth floor of the Earth Sciences building at the University of Calgary. It was like, Earth Sciences is out to remind us that we're doing something useless. They were saying science, technology, engineering. They hadn't really hit mathematics yet. That was still kind of soft back then, the 80s. But it was the call from industry, these are what we need. And then just a few years later, it was like, well, we were kind of wrong about that. What we really need are people with soft skills. Falling back on old ways. Making everything the same, everything common. I heard several times today the call for a national e-learning policy. And my reaction to that is, why would we want to do that? People actually say, we're lagging the rest of the world because we don't have a national learning policy. If you look at the PISA results, we're among the best educated countries in the world. So in what sense are we lagging? But no, there has to be a national policy. Why? Because we all have to be doing the same thing. If we are all doing the same thing, we can measure it all the same way, then we'll know if we're succeeding. Doing the old thing. Standards, definition, there's always a call for common terminology. We need to know what we understand by literacies, what we understand by competencies, etc., etc. And that brings me to the topic of 21st century skills, 21st century literacies. And we think that what we mean are digital literacies, right? How to use a computer, how to be secure on a computer, stuff like that. But that's not what the 21st century teaches us at all. And to the administrators here, if you'd listen to the researchers who just got up and presented, you'd see evidence of this over and over and over again. And if you go look at all the proposals and the discussions, that you'll see it repeated so many times. Knowledge is not a set of rules, facts, outcomes, etc. The world, we have this mechanistic view of the world as being organized with nice, neat causes and effects. And if you run a program, you can expect an outcome. And one of the insights of the 21st century is, or should be, the world is not constructed that way. Now, I don't have slides, but pretend I do. And we'll put up that wonderful animated slide by Naveen Devasagayam with all the complexities, right? And the random motions, and it's interesting, because he said, I thought it was great, people understand it better when you show the really complex version of it rather than the simplified version of it. So why do we develop simplified policies and understand research in the simplified way? Processes that depend on chaotic, random motion. That's the phrase that he used. He was talking, about some real pipe. Tightly packed atoms or cells or molecules or I don't know. But he might as well have been talking about science. If you talk to someone like Paul Feyerabend, who spent a lifetime investigating the methodology of research and science and academia generally, basically his principle is anything goes. Processes that depend on chaotic random motion. Tanya Elchuk, again, drawing out the idea that physicality, reason, and emotion are all one system. That there isn't this rationalist process whereby we can put in an input run a set of inferences or calculations and get an output. It doesn't work that way. Learning doesn't work that way. Science and research doesn't work that way. The future doesn't work that way. I wrote a paper once that made me moderately famous at the time. It was called The Future of Online Learning. I wrote it in 1998. I wrote it on a two-week vacation because my managers, I was busy coding a learning management system. I hadn't communicated with them for 2-3 months. And they said, we want to know what you're doing. So I wrote this, and I wrote it making fairly reasonable projections based on technology, Moore's Law, and all of that. But I also wrote it based on the fact that humans are irrational. They will use a multi-billion, multi-trillion internet communication systems to post pictures of cats. Reason, emotion, and physicality are all one system. We think of learning as though it's rule-centered. We think of learning as though, you know, we're supposed to, you know, transmit some content. They'll construct a representation of the world. It's the physical symbol system hypothesis. They'll have nice, neat sentences in the brain. But we don't even learn language that way. I loved the talk by Janet Werker talking about language learning. And you know, the child isn't learning, you know, transformative grammar, despite what Chomsky says. The child is learning sensitivity to the rhythm. Learning language by rhythm. That's how neural networks work. Spatial learning is predictive of success in mathematics, said Catherine Bruce. Not knowledge of formulas, transformations, the times table, or anything like that. I was sitting there, she's talking about that, and I'm thinking, I once applied for a job at 7-Eleven. Yeah. I spent like 3 years there. They tested me, I know, it was brutal. They tested, $4.50 an hour. They tested me, I knew I didn't want a career in retail, by showing me pictures of things on shelves and asking me how many things are there. And of course you had to infer, right? You can only see the ones in the front and the ones on the side, and you had to figure out, you know, do a little quick geometry and that. So, and they got my results, said, yeah, you can do math. Now I get it. So what is it that we learn from the 21st century? We must have learned by now that knowledge isn't a set of facts and principles. It's a networked relation between simple environments and complex environments. Simple elements and complex environments. That's what learning is. And if you understand that that's what learning is, you understand that we're not teaching people, especially in this new environment. People are teaching themselves. And that should be the key to transformation of education in the 21st century. We're working in a complex global environment of, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 billion densely interconnected human beings. That's the environment in which we're learning now. Simple propagation of content won't work. Simple propagation of tasks, skills, competencies won't work. What we need to be thinking about is not curriculum and standards and outcomes. We should be thinking about designing environments. Ask ourselves, what are the elements of literacy, whatever that is, people need? I made a stab at it. You can find it on my website. And then ask, what are the design elements that scaffold this? There's plenty of precedent. Game designers have been doing it for years. Social network designers like Facebook and Twitter have been doing it for fewer years. There's a guy out there called Dan Lochten, wrote a book called Architectures of Control in Design. Why is that relevant? If you want people to avoid traffic crossing the road on Rideau Street, do you teach them don't cross against the light, or you put up a barrier in a tunnel? The latter works effectively, and you don't even need to teach them. They learn for themselves. And the reason why you need to do that is they will never learn if you try to teach them, which is why they built the tunnel. This kind of environment, the importance of peers, the importance of network, the importance of connection, the idea that knowledge is not something that is transmitted, but created by interactions of people from different perspectives and different points of view in society. This is the kind of model we should be building, not only for education, but also for science. So, how do you know it's working? How do you know you've succeeded? Well, I don't think you can point to outcomes. And the reason I don't think you can point to outcomes is because outcomes change. What we wanted today isn't what we want even tomorrow. Now, the events of one day can change our desired outcomes dramatically. What you have to do is get the process right. And if you get the process right, then the random interaction of, I've forgotten the phrase, processes that depend on random chaotic motion kick in. You have what they call a strange attractor that'll lead you all over the place. But if you build your processes right, you build your knowledge, you build your knowing society. So what are those processes? What are the principles of effective network building? Networks that learn, networks that are dynamic, networks that adapt. I've taken a stab at it for what it's worth. I've identified four major principles. Autonomy. Each entity in a network chooses its own methods, its own priorities, its own outcomes. I say it, but I mean them, his, her. But networks can be things that are not just people. Networks can be made of neurons. Networks can be made of crickets. Networks can be made of power stations. Each one operates autonomously and independently. And so, for example, I focus and emphasize cooperation, interaction for mutual benefit, rather than collaboration, commonality of purpose or outcome. Second element, diversity. Think about how many of our processes are based around seeking sameness. This is a mistake. What makes a network capable of adaptation, what makes a society capable of growth, is diversity. We know this. So why would we want to standardize education across Canada? It's exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. I draw inspiration from the educational system in the city of Edmonton, which has a system based on diverse types of schools that people can choose from. Third, openness. We need to find different ways of addressing ownership, security, and safety other than clamping down on everything, other than preaching copyright law, other than digital locks and digital millennium copyright acts. The only way a network can function is if signals and interactions can go from one entity to another. If they can't, the network is broken. It freezes. It becomes network dead. And then finally, what I call interactivity. This is the idea that knowledge is created not by the propagation of a signal from one entity to the next, the knowledge is not in the signal. The knowledge emerges from or arises from the interactivity of all the entities working together. This again is why it's foolish to judge up the outcome of a particular individual. It doesn't matter what the outcome of a particular individual is. The outcome that you're after is the entire network working together. Just to wrap up, a couple minutes. I was touted as the inventor of the MOOC, and it's true. In 2008, George Siemens and myself and Dave Cormier and a bunch of other people created the world's first massive open online course. I sometimes feel like one of those rock bands that had a hit back when today's young adults were kids. But the reason that worked, and it did work, it worked really well, is that we employed these four principles and what I've talked about in the design of our open online course. We did not try to teach a curriculum. We did not have a specific body of knowledge we wanted people to learn. We created an environment where they could explore, investigate, try things out, practice, develop skills, and learn for themselves with and from each other. And as a whole, we learned a lot together. And as a whole, we invented the MOOC. Today, I'm engaged in a project called Learning and Performance Support Systems. I'm the program leader for that, that program. The idea now is to take the concepts that we applied successfully in the MOOC and apply them to individual personal learning. Why would I do that? Because autonomy, diversity, openness, interactivity. Each person's educational experience is individual, is personal, should be managed by that person in an open and communicative environment. The technology for that does not exist yet over and above the internet, which is pretty good technology as a whole, and that's what I'm working on. So, thinking about the future. Future's not going to be the way we expect it. We can't plan for some imagined future that we think is going to happen. We have to plan for a future that we know we don't know. And that means we have to be able to be adaptive. We need to learn the skills and the capacities to be adaptive. And that means not teaching specific literacies to specific competencies or specific outcomes, but developing the capacity to be, as I often describe it, a node in the network or a surfer on the wave. Thank you very much. Three minutes.
Surely, there's a reaction to that.
I have a question. So I really liked your reference to the MOOC. I did wonder what. So is the MOOC dead?
No. There are thousands of MOOCs today. There are several dozen MOOC companies. I've got a couple of MOOCs coming up. Well, I've actually have three MOOCs coming up in the new year. Which I haven't announced yet, so you didn't hear that. So, the MOOC is not dead. And even more importantly to me, the concept of open online learning is not dead. It's just beginning. The MOOC was the first real instantiation of it. You won't be able to get rid of it now. Open online learning is here to stay. And that's a good thing.
Thanks, that was very interesting. Reflecting on this idea of open online learning, one of the things we talked about a fair bit today is experiential learning and the role that plays. How do you offer this kind of meaningful, reflective, experiential learning through this online delivery system? Do you have, in your experience and wisdom, advice on that?
Yeah, I am all about experiential learning, even more so than you can possibly imagine. I didn't address it in this talk because, 20 minutes. But so one of the reasons why we're building an LPSS, Learning Performance Support System, we don't have a real name for it yet. You don't want to hear some of the suggestions, they're awful. is to be able to, as I say, project the capacity of a personal learning environment into multiple environments. So the idea is you have an individual learning application, say. But this application sits in the cloud, and it gathers resource, it does things for you, blah, 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 right? And now, no matter where you are, you can access this resource. On your phone, on your computer, in the dashboard of your car, on the equipment, the control panel on your ship, or etc., right? Any area where you're working, productivity tools. The idea is that we want to be able to make learning available to you there. But you have to build that infrastructure. We don't have a system designed for that infrastructure yet. In fact, quite the opposite. We have a system designed for large, big, standalone applications. I talked about building an internet learning infrastructure so that learning becomes ubiquitous, like electricity. Or another example I like is text. Text is everywhere you need it. And it does really useful things. It tells you not to take more than 3 pills in one day. Things like that. That's where learning should be. Any place you find text now, any place you find one of those little help diagrams now, you should find learning. Learning that you can use, learning that's interactive, and learning that is your own personal learning, that already knows what you know, already has a record of the experience you've had.
I'm curious, outcome-based education was a big thing in K-12 education in the 80s and 90s, and I don't want to say died, but it certainly withered. And yet it seems to be blooming in higher ed right now.
Yep.
And as much as we try to say there's some pitfalls there, those pitfalls aren't being listened to.
Do you want the cynical view? There's a lot of money in outcomes-based education. Because outcomes-based education leads to standardization. Standardization leads to mass publishing. There's a lot of money in mass publishing. So that, to me, is why it keeps coming back. And that, to me, is why there's a constant background roar along the lines of, everybody's the same, they all learn the same. And it's so obviously not true. If everybody was the same, you'd all be wearing the same clothes. Your hair would be the same, except some may be grayer than others, etc., right? But no, everyone's different. That's what's fantastic. But getting us to move to that state in education is a challenge because of the commercial challenge. It's really, really hard to build an educational system based on personal experience, personal learning records, and all of that. Really hard. Once we have it, we'll never give it up, right? But it's like the days everybody can write as compared to the days only a few people can write. There were a lot of arguments, right? People shouldn't learn to write. They'll write stupid things, right? So it's the same thing with learning.
Well, okay, thank you so much. Please join me in thanking Mr. Down.
I thought someone left this here.
It's for you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.